This is Michael Edward Miller, host of Around and About. Coming up on the show, a conversation with author Sybil Baker. She received a grant to write a book about immigrants in Chattanooga. Her initial plan was to simply interview immigrants and publish those interviews. She wound up writing something broader, a book that's also about gentrification, Chattanooga history, and her own experiences living and traveling abroad. But she struggled with including her own point of view.
I did it very reluctantly, although I did start learning that I maybe did have a story to tell, that I could personalize these stories more instead of making them feel more removed. And so I'm not the hero in the book necessarily.
In this upcoming interview, she'll tell us why she did include her point of view and how gentrification affects immigrants and refugees in Chattanooga. Stay tuned. Around and About is next.
The story of President Trump's first 100 days is unfolding not just in Washington, but all across America.
These sorts of things that are happening right now, we have to stand up. If we don't stand up, then it normalizes.
He's got the right idea. We've got to put our country first, not just on the pro-life issue, but with everything. We've got to get jobs back into the
country. Count on NPR News to follow the way decisions in Washington affect your hometown. Listen every day. Tune into Morning Edition weekdays 6 to 10 on WUTC.
Welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. On today's show, we're talking about the new book, Immigration Essays, Stories of Refugees and Immigrants in Chattanooga. Sybil Baker wrote it. She's an author and a University of Tennessee at Chattanooga professor. The book is also about gentrification, local history, and Baker's own experiences living in South Korea and traveling the world. Starting with when she was very young, and didn't exactly get the most positive response to her earliest efforts to wander.
In the fifth grade, my girlfriends and I decided, unannounced, to explore an unpaved dirt road we'd heard connected their neighborhood to mine. When we arrived at my house an hour or so later, my parents were waiting, furious and frightened. While we tried not to show how much fun we'd had on our adventure, my parents were on the phone with my girlfriend's parents, letting them know we were safe. "Why did you go off like that without telling anyone?" they asked. That it hadn't occurred to us to tell anyone did not suffice. Our parents worried about us not just as children, but as girls especially. Empty dirt roads surrounded by forests are places where, under the wrong circumstances, young girls disappear. We were unaware of such dangers, alert only to the excitement an unplanned journey could offer. It was difficult to understand why the adults were so worried. But I knew from then on, excessive wandering would be punished.
That's Sybil Baker reading from her new book, Immigration Essays. Just to be clear, Baker is not an immigrant to America, but the book contains both her experiences leaving America and living abroad. She spent 12 years in South Korea. And the book recounts the experiences of immigrants and refugees coming to Chattanooga. Baker has been working on this book for several years. In 2013, she received a Makework grant to write it. We'll start out talking about that. Sybil Baker, thank you for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You got a Makework grant to write this, and that program has been shut down for a while. So first of all, could you explain what that is?
Sure. So the Makework grants were to help artists and in Chattanooga originally, or I actually got two. The first one I got helped me with a novel that is coming out. So these were projects that ended up taking a lot longer for me to write. But the novel's based in Chattanooga, and that was where it started. And people with Makework grants were visual artists, sculptors, musicians, as well as writers. And if you got a small grant, the very last year they did the Makework grant, you could then apply for the larger one. And that was the one I had for Immigration Essays. And originally that was to look at Chattanooga's unheard voices. That's what they wanted to focus on. And I had a journalism degree, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just interview some of Chattanooga's unheard voices.
Right.
And then we'll write about them and publish them in some chat books.
Mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of unheard voices. And so as soon as we got the grant, I realized that the topic was very large.
Yeah.
And I got a bit overwhelmed. And so I started, then I moved to just, I first, it started with me interviewing the refugees in Chattanooga.
You also tackle things like gentrification and Americans who moved to Chattanooga from other cities, and even local history like Ed Johnson, a black man who was lynched on the Walnut Street Bridge. So in some ways, it's examining Chattanooga as a destination. And your book explores the effects of gentrification in the MLK neighborhood specifically. I think that's really interesting, and I want to start there. So what was you and your husband's kind of role in gentrification in that neighborhood?
Yeah, I think this book definitely, one of the things I want to do is ask more questions than answer and to start a conversation.
Yeah.
And so I really just began with thinking about, my husband and I moved to the MLK from living in South Korea. So we didn't even really know all the quote unquote politics of Chattanooga. And we went to MLK because we wanted to be able to walk to school at UTC because we didn't own a car in South Korea. And so we wanted to at least be able to walk around a lot. And at that point, UTC had a grant for people that would live in those types of neighborhoods. I guess it was called work nearby neighborhoods that they wanted to develop more.
Like work where you live or something.
Yes, exactly. And it was the very last one. We found there was one left. And when I got the job offer, we were still in South Korea, but we were so worked up about the grant that we thought we got to buy the house now before someone else gets it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we bought it without really looking at it. And so that was how we moved into MLK. And then from there, we made friends and learned more about the neighborhood. And then also, you know, kind of understanding that as much as I benefited from all of that, I was also part of the process of MLK's gentrification for good and for ill.
And gentrification, how do you think that does relate to immigration? Why did you decide to include that?
Well, for example, and I don't write about this a lot in the book, but when I would go, because I volunteer with Bridge Refugee Services, and part of that volunteering is to take, they call them the clients, but the refugees, they need to go to doctor's appointments. They don't have a car, and the public transportation is too far away. So I would take them to appointments. So part of that was me going to where they lived. And of course, they cannot afford very expensive housing. And so this is one of the problems is as refugees, they don't have money for a car, yet they can't afford to live in an area where they would have access to even the bus stop is a ways away.
Yes.
And so this is an issue of, I think, gentrification, where they would probably be more comfortable living in a neighborhood that would have a lot of resources available to them, but they're out farther away because that's the housing they can afford.
And Chattanooga can be, depending on where you live, a very difficult place if you don't have a car.
Exactly. And the other issue I would say about with the refugees is and immigrants is, and I too tended to think of Chattanooga as not very international. I think of it more as an old southern city where
right.
we're dealing with racial, you know, and now Hispanics coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the gentrification, I mean, there are huge communities actually in Chattanooga, you know, of refugees and people coming in from different countries who often live near each other, but they're out in neighborhoods that I don't even know about because that's where they can afford to live. So we do have those, but to me, they're somewhat invisible.
One of the things you do is you have personal stories from refugees and immigrants here in Chattanooga. I think one of the most interesting ones is a guy from Iraq named Salim. Could we get you to read his story?
Salim, a Kurd born in Diyala, Iraq, began his mandatory military service shortly before the Gulf War broke out. As part of the Iraqi army in 1991, he was captured by American forces and held for 2 months as a prisoner of war. During his time as a POW, Salim's English, which he learned in school and from TV, improved from communicating with the American soldiers. Before the first Iraq War in 1991, Salim and his family did well. His wife was a math and kindergarten teacher. He repaired watches and sold food in a small shop. But after 1991, the economy fell apart because of international sanctions and his family struggled. During the second Iraq War in 2003, because of his ability to speak English, Salim, as an Iraqi soldier, became a coordinator and interpreter with the United States Army. After the U.S. Army left in 2011, Al-Qaeda terrorists, knowing he'd worked with the Americans, began phoning his house, threatening his family's life. Once, while Salim was out, men with weapons circled his house. His wife called the Iraqi police, who, this time, were able to chase them away. A week after the first incident, Salim received a call from his neighbor, telling him there were men with machine guns on his roof. Again, the police arrived and sent the terrorists away. But Salim knew that the next time, or the time after that, he and his family might not be so lucky. Because his life was in danger, and because he'd helped the Americans during the war, he applied to immigrate to the States as a refugee. While their status was being approved, the family moved from Diyala to Erbil, the capital of Iraqi Kurdistan. After 2 years, on December 4, 2013, Salim and his family left Erbil for Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's Sybil Baker reading from her new book, Immigration Essays, published by CNR Press. Here's more of our conversation. Later on, he returns in the book, and it doesn't seem like it's going as well for him as he'd hoped or you'd hoped. What eventually happens with him?
Well, and that's a good question because I have not been in touch with him for a few years. The last I heard, he's doing fine. But in the book, he's having some housing issues. So this goes again to how is gentrification and immigration and refugees, how is this coming together? And so the lease he's on, I think, is month to month, and he's learning he has to move out. And
yeah.
So when I see him again, he's had no sleep. He's worried. This is a man who's always having to move all the time, and it just would like some stability for his family. And so he's very anxious about trying to find some place to stay.
And you interview people from all sorts of different countries. What were some of the common threads you found in these stories?
I think some of the common threads are, one, and this is not to bash America, but if they had their way, they would be back in their country. This is not America's the best, I want to come here. These are people whose lives were threatened. And a lot of them, like Salim, was an interpreter for the U.S. Army. And the reason his life was threatened is because he was working for the U.S. Army. So a lot of them have tried to stay in their country for as long as they can and just cannot without their lives and their families being threatened. Now, that said, the other common thread with all of them that had children, they had huge hopes for their children here in the States. And in that sense, they were very optimistic about being in the States, that they felt that the U.S. would provide their children opportunities that they would not have in their their original country. And so in that sense, they were very optimistic and believed in the American dream for their children.
You kind of contrast that with your own experiences, the experience of somebody who's a refugee who is forced to give up everything and move to a new place versus you, and particularly your experience in South Korea where you went voluntarily. But it sounds like it was almost a last-ditch, last-minute kind of decision to go there. Tell me about that.
Yes, I think when I'd always wanted to live abroad for a year, there was the allure of being the expatriate and living in France. But that really wasn't possible for someone who needed to pay off a little bit of student loans.
Yeah.
And needed a job, and South Korea offered that. So I ended up in a country that I knew very little about, as you said, really within a few months of deciding to do that. And then the 1 year turned into 12.
How did that work? How did you go from, just culture shock to, hey, let's stay here and stay here and stay here?
Well, after the first year, I was really ready to go back to the States. But part of that was just because I had a job that was, I was teaching in a language institute, and we didn't get a lot of time off, and I was just exhausted. However, there was some university jobs available at the time, and I did have a master's degree. And so once I got that, where I suddenly was working fewer hours in Korea, and I got long months of vacation in the winter and summer to travel, then I had time and money for the first time in my life, and I just got addicted to traveling. And Korea was much more pleasant once I didn't have to work the long hours.
How do you think doing that, being in Korea for more than a decade, informed you as you were trying to tell the stories of people from other countries immigrating to Chattanooga?
I think the way it was helpful was I was definitely an other in Korea, and I was a white person in a country of Asians. So it made me aware of race And it also made me much more aware of, you know, sometimes it's thrown around a lot, the word privilege, but white people from the States got a much higher status than a Filipino worker there, a darker skinned. And so I could see how race was, there was racism even in Korea. So darker skinned Asians who were there working were not treated as well. So being an outsider gives you the opportunity, I think, to notice those things more that you don't question as much. So being away from Korea when I moved to Chattanooga, even though I'm from the South, I was able in some ways to see the divisions that I think if you grew up with, you don't even notice so much anymore.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Sybil Baker. Her book is Emigration Essays. The book is in many ways your personal experiences. Much of it is written from your point of view. Some of it is more just objective, historical, this happened and this happened. And you talk about in the foreword to the book how your early drafts didn't really have that, but people said, we'd like more of you in there. How do you do that without coming off as basically narcissistic?
That's a good question. And I don't know if I have the answer. And that was why I was reluctant to include myself is, and I admire a lot of creative nonfiction writers and people that write memoirs. So I am a fan of that genre. I just never thought that I was someone to be in that genre because I didn't, even though I've traveled a lot, I guess I never knew how to translate that into a book about me and my life. So I did it very reluctantly, although I did start learning that I maybe did have a story to tell, that I could personalize these stories more instead of making them feel more removed. And how you do that without being narcissistic is a very good question. And I hope that I've achieved that, but hopefully I think the big thing was trying to relate the questions, not just to me, but connecting them to other people and to the world. Also questioning myself. So I'm not the hero in the book necessarily.
No, more just the observer.
I'm an observer, but I'm also ignorant of, for example, when I'm traveling around Southeastern Europe, I'm not really seeing what's going on with the refugee crisis. I'm just doing my little American traveler thing. And certainly with the gentrification and race, as I say, there's, you know, some ignorance and definitely, you know, I'm trying to make my own money in my own way. So I'm definitely not the perfect heroine in the book.
Well, I think that's why it works, actually, is because it's not coming off as here I am and I'm so interesting. It's more just you're a surrogate for the reader because most of your readers are probably going to be people like you, people who are not refugees or not immigrants and who maybe don't know a lot about it.
That's right. And I hope to have to bridge some of that for people who feel like they don't know a lot about it as an introduction to learning about some of those things, because in some ways I've been very fortunate to because my husband is from South Africa and my brother is married to a Turkish woman and they live in Turkey. I've been fortunate through my family and through living abroad to maybe having a few more encounters than some people do. But until I was almost 30 years old, I was, you know, suburban American woman with very few of those encounters. So I try to bring that bridge in.
What are you hoping that readers get out of this book?
I hope that readers get the desire to have a conversation. I feel like I bring up a lot of different topics and talk about a lot of things and try to connect those personally. And for me, the most important thing is that I would like people just to talk about them more. And to me, that was the first step to perhaps understanding and awareness.
And I think it's interesting when you meet someone, maybe somebody who's working at a lunch counter or somebody on the bus or whatever, who's clearly not from here. On one hand, you want to say, like, where are you from? What are you doing here? But on the other hand, you're afraid it'll come off as rude or just It's not really your business to question who they are and why they're here.
Right. So I think that's a good question as far as especially saying about having a conversation. And so that is one of the, as I said, I didn't even know, I didn't get to know the refugees only. I only got to know them through volunteering. So one of the things that's been great for me is volunteering with different, I also volunteer at Chattanooga Girls Leadership Academy. And so volunteering and forcing myself to have conversations with people I may not encounter in my day-to-day life. And so sometimes you do have to step out of your comfort zone to do that and know when there's an appropriate time and place to do that. But certainly I would say then if you're interested in saying, oh, I want to learn more about refugees, Bridge always needs volunteers. If you want to mentor someone from a disadvantaged background or neighborhood, there's plenty of opportunities like that in Chattanooga. And that's where I think a lot of learning and conversation can begin.
Is there anything else you want to say?
No, it's just wonderful talking with you, and it's my pleasure as always.
That was Sybil Baker talking about her new book, Immigration Essays. CNR Press published it. That's Conscious and Responsible Press. It contains stories of immigrants and refugees from Sudan, Cuba, Iraq, Ukraine, and other countries, people who've moved to Chattanooga. It also contains accounts of her own reverse migration from America to Ankara. The collection of essays has been described as a roadmap to the world with all its complexities. Coming up February 15th, that's this Wednesday, she has a book launch at Starline Books with special guests George Conley and Earl Braggs. That's Wednesday, the 15th at 7 p.m., Starline Books. And by the way, during the interview, Sybil Baker mentioned volunteering with Chattanooga's Bridge Refugee Services. I wanted to know more about the organization's role in creating this book, so I spoke with Marina Pastriano, the associate director. Sybil Baker, so she got this Makework grant to write a book about immigration in Chattanooga, and she wasn't really sure exactly what to do, so she came to you. Can you tell me what she was asking you about?
I'm always very careful. People ask me pretty often about stories, but more often they want a personal experience, they want to interview, they want to meet refugees. It's very difficult decision. You want to be a liaison between community and refugee community, but at the same time, you don't want the stories to be misused, people being mistreated, and always encourage them to say no if they have any doubts. These people have had very hard life. They're fleeing persecution. Very often, they're not ready to share their stories, or there is a reason they don't want to share their stories. Or they ask for anonymity, or they have to change certain names and places just because it is still, after all this year in America, all these years in America, is not safe for them to avail themselves.
Well, that's exactly what she talks about in the book, is how if you're a refugee, there are really two stories. There's the one you tell people, and then there's the real story. And for different reasons, those are going to be different stories. The story you tell is going to leave out some things that are personal or that are maybe just difficult to explain.
Sybil has a very personal and deep knowledge of immigration issues, of refugee stories. Her life is the best example of somebody who took themselves out of their comfort zone and pursued intentionally as a writer, as a person, to learn more about people and to learn about people not in a pretty nice safe environment, but by helping them, by putting yourself out there.
For people who read Sybil Baker's book, Immigration Essays, and say, you know, I'd like to get involved with helping refugees, what can they do? What are you looking for at Bridge?
We always look for community support, and it can come in many different ways. If you want a hands-on experience, we can train you to be a volunteer and help you connect with families. It can be donations. We set apartments for people who come to welcome them. We take them from airport to their own apartment. For majority of them, it's probably the first apartment where one family lives in many, many years. You can get involved with that. They need a lot of transportations to appointments because they don't have cars. And we all know that public transportation is not perfect. It's getting better, but it's not there yet. We also would definitely welcome financial donations. Look us up on the web. We are on Facebook. We have a website. They will direct you to our volunteer managers, to our administrative staff, everything.
You'll find more information at bridgerefugees.org. And Sybil Baker, her website is sybilbaker.net. Again, she's got a book launch event coming up at Starline Books on Wednesday, February 15th at 7 p.m. You're listening to Around and About Chattanooga.